Good morning and welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. And good morning to Mayor Tony Harp. Mayor Harp is here in the studio for her regular Mayor Monday checkup on what she and we are up to in New Haven. You can join the conversation if you go on Facebook Live on the New Haven Independent Facebook page. You'll see the show live streaming, and you can put a question there. Harry, you'll be watching the site to see who puts in questions. And today's program is made possible, in part, thanks to his support from Bertram Moses and Devlin PC, and from Gateway Community College in downtown New Haven. Thanks, Gateway. Thanks, Bertram. And thanks, Mayor Harp, for coming in for your checkup. The doctor's in.
Good morning, Paul.
Did you get enough fluids and rest?
Probably not as much as I should have. Got a little cold.
Well, you know what? Because you've been running around so much. See, I follow what you're doing, not because I have as much energy, but because my reporters happen to see everywhere they're going. For instance, on Saturday, you were spotted in yet another park on the move. This one is Goff Street Park, right, otherwise known as the Gale Field, otherwise known as, what's the other one they always call it?
Beaver Ponds
Park. Beaver Ponds Park, right. And isn't there a discussion about whether it's ponds or pond?
I think that it's ponds, but most of us call it pond.
And also, like, Beaver Hill could also be Beaver Hills, right?
Yeah, it could be.
These are the major fights in our city of 18.7 square miles. We got that in early on this show. So you were out there because I think it's about 15 parks in town have friends groups, if I'm not mistaken. And the alder there, Jill Marks, decided that there needed to be a Friends of Goff Street Park group started to help the Parks Department, to help the Parks and Recs Department maintain the park. It's a big park. A lot of people use it day and night.
Right.
And they wanted to help clean it up. So they had a launch event where they started a new friends group, and they also they ran around with rakes on the perimeters of the park, by the fences, in the park, on the streets, on the corner, to clean it up. And they first, you had an event when you and others spoke and were happy about the beginning of this. What was it like? Tell me what the day was like.
Well, it was really nice. There were people from actually all over the city. There must have been five or six alders from different wards that were there to support Alder Marks, Jill Marks. And then there were a number of people from the Beaver Hill neighborhood who...
But not from Beaver Hills, because they were going to Beaver Pond Park, but they stayed away from Beaver Ponds.
Well, you know, one of the things that we recognize, you know, people don't realize that we have over 200 parks in our city.
See, I didn't realize it either. When my reporter wrote that, I took it out because I couldn't believe it was true.
We do, and we, all different sizes and shapes. But one of the bigger ones is Beaver Ponds Park, and and actually Goff Street Park and Hill House, and then across the way that there really is a pond there, maybe two separated by a road. And then even the Cherry Ann Park that we talked about, that's all a part of Beaver Ponds Park.
Oh, really? So it's spawned like a SCOBY... Spawning another SCOBY in a jar of kombucha, this spawns another little park that sort of has its own identity and makes opportunities for new appreciation nature. And just so we can fill people in, last week, Cherry Ann Street is on the border of New Hallville and Hamden. Right. At the end of that street, there was this overgrown area that no one could go into. And the neighborhood united with the city, and they got some help from an outside grant, to turn that into a new park, a momish park. And people from both sides of the border city, Hamden, New Haven, are now have kids playing in there, and they cleaned it up and made it into a park. And you're right, it's on the other side of that pond. So even though it's technically Goff Street Park, psychically, wouldn't you agree, it has nothing to do with Goff Street Park. I mean, that's really like another part of the city.
Well, it's if you think about all the greenery that is in between, there are two schools, Hill House and Jackie Robinson. Yeah, King Robinson.
Oh, King Robinson, right.
And if you think about Cherry Hill being the top of it and then sort of swinging through Jackie Robinson and down, we've put some institutional buildings there. And then going over to where Hill House is and the fields over there, they're all a part of that park, including Goff Street.
And we're reclaiming it. So one end, we have this new Cherry Ann Park.
Right.
And what I love also, I know when I've stepped into Cherry Ann Park, you see your city in a whole different way. You see how closely connected we are when it seems like we're far if you're driving or walking around streets and you have to go all the way around for a mile or so.
Right.
You see that it cuts right through the swath, as you just mentioned, of green space.
Right.
Where the ball fields by Hill House, Beaver Pond Park right near downtown, Goff Street, and then all the way to Newville by the Hamden border, and we are connected.
We are connected. And, you know, Southern is right there, too. And I would imagine a certain part of Southern is in that park as well.
Definitely. And you've always had neighbors right near Southern, like Nan Bartow and others who have cleaned up that area. So now right. We're cleaning up with Jill Marks, and you were there to help rally the
and
forces.
And Nan was there, too.
Who?
Nan Bartow. Uh-huh. She's the one who gave us the history. That's why I know it.
And it's interesting, too, the way that you all work in concert, that when things get done in New Haven, it's a combination. So you have Honda Smith there from Public Works, who does a lot of work in enlisting neighbors to supplement what you can do with Public Works crews. She'll do neighbor cleanups, so she brings them the bags and the gloves and brings the truck to cart it away. And she tries to magnify what the city can do with citizen power. Not that the city's not doing its job, but as you say, 200 parks, they're not going to keep them all clean every day. And you really have to enlist citizens, government together to take on projects like this.
You really do. And one of the really great things that Honda Smith was doing was in the areas that she was cleaning, she was letting them know what the rules are around how to keep your property clean. Because her whole point is, if people know, then later, if there are problems and they get citations of some sort, at least they would have been informed.
By property, you mean private property near the park or the park property?
Private property.
So what's an example of a rule that we didn't know?
You know, you're supposed to keep your lawns cut.
ours grew a little big.
Yeah, and so a lot of people don't know that there's that you can be fined if you don't.
It's over 6 inches, correct? Tall.
I don't know.
I remember Elaine Braffman going with the ruler at LCI when they passed that law. We took a picture of her once in the Old Advocate with the ruler with people's grass. The aim of that was to use it against absentee owners, especially banks with bad property that they were letting run down. And she would go there with the ruler to make sure it was 6 inches high. I think it's $99 a day. Am I wrong?
Well, it's a lot. And, you know, honestly, if you didn't know the rule and you thought that it was okay to let your grass grow wild, up to whatever. I mean, sometimes I've seen people that have, it's up to my knee anyway. At least now you know. And if you get some sort of citation, fine, you'll know why.
Now, we keep talking about this person, Honda Smith. She works in public works and she cares about public spaces. And I mentioned a minute ago, I've seen her go to neighborhood cleanups that she helps organize through an alder or through a community team, management team. She brings them the gloves and they all go, you know, I've seen 15 people go out and then the truck comes and they got the gloves and the bags. She also was working with you on a clean city initiative.
Right.
It's one of those kind of drives that aren't sexy, quote unquote, in terms of everyone knowing about it in the city. But I've seen her in the last couple of summers where you got teens, for instance, in neighborhoods like Dixwell, who use money you're giving them from LCI, these neighborhood challenge, neighborhood-based budgeting projects, which we love. We actually cover everyone like they're the major decisions of government, how every neighborhood's going to decide to spend every year to spend $10,000. And because it's fun to watch how democratic budgeting can take place. And in some of the neighborhoods like Dixwell, they have the kids cleaning up over the summer.
Yep.
And Honda's part of that. And you see them get more of a stake in their neighborhood, and the kids year-round pay attention to how they throw stuff on the ground, how other people do too, and they stop that. And I think, you know, that's something that subtly but so importantly determines how we feel about our city, how much trash is on the ground.
Oh, absolutely. It's really important. When you see that your city is clean and people respect it, then, you know, I think people act a little bit better. They're kinder to one another.
I just remember living in Fairhaven in the 90s. I had a little house, and we used to fill a bag every day with the trash that people threw from a corner store, you know, and I used to feel bad.
And, you know, the other thing that I've noticed is that, I'm glad you brought up the corner stores, is that they're required as well to have receptacles that they empty. And oftentimes you'll just see them in front of the store just spewing over. And so some of what she provided in terms of information makes it clear that if you have the kind of establishment that generates trash, you have an obligation to have trash receptacles there for your patrons, but also to remove the trash.
Yeah. And also Saturday, were you also at this, we didn't make it this one, I feel bad, the Father's Day event at Scantlebury Park?
It was canceled because of the rain.
Oh, okay.
So you'll have another opportunity, as will I.
How did you do with Father? Do you, Father Day affect you at all?
I mean, well, you know, now that my husband is no longer with us, and you know, I think it's just a time of reflection.
I got to tell you, I kind of resent Father's Day.
You know, a lot of men do.
You know why? I feel like it's a capitalist plot. I feel like these holidays are invented, maybe I'm wrong, by home. Well, we know Labor Day was invented by capitalists to try to stop the real workers' holiday so people wouldn't form unions and they could take that away from them. I know this is the cynicism that maybe you don't like me to keep spouting about on your show, but I feel like it's to sell greeting cards and make what should be a family feeling that has nothing to do with commerce into an excuse to buy things.
But, you know, I think that Father's Day is more of that sort of family feeling than Mother's Day is. And I'll tell you why, because, you know, someone was making fun. I did go to church on Sunday too. Minister was making fun of the fact that, you know, like during Mother's Day, you know, like you can't get a restaurant reservation. It's great for restaurants. It's great for flower places. But if it's Father's Day, you don't have to worry. You can get one. Because most of the activities that surround fathers are at home. Mm. And, you know, so that I really think Father's Day brings families closer together. Wow. Than Mother's Day does, at least in a non-commercial
way. I've seen you, without violent conferences, being taken out for Mother's Day to a brunch. I think that's kind of sweet.
I think it's sweet, too. And some fathers are very upset that they don't get to go out. Well, and that they have to actually grill on Father's Day.
But then some fathers are macho, they get to grill, right?
Yeah,
that's true. So primal about that. So maybe that's kind of good kind of commerce. Maybe I'm wrong. It's good to boost local restaurants on Mother's Day. I mean, I like seeing people out at a local. I just feel like I shouldn't have to buy those Hallmark cards.
And for Father's Day, you get to stay home and, you know, and have a yard neck, right?
Or you can listen to Mayor Monday at Monday Morning at WNHH Radio, your home for community radio broadcast at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. You are listening to Mayor Monday with Mayor Tony Harp here, filling in what's going around the city. Last week was kind of an interesting Board of Education meeting. We learned that New Haven, like a lot of other cities, is going to Puerto Rico. We just sent three recruiters down to Puerto Rico. Because they've closed a lot of schools down there because they've gone bankrupt. And you have all these bilingual teachers who are out of jobs or might be out of jobs. And meanwhile, we have these openings, and we're not the only ones, for bilingual teachers that are hard to fill because it's hard to find qualified bilingual teachers. Yet that's such an important part. You know, when you look at Columbus School or Clinton Avenue School, this bilingual education track is really working for native Spanish speakers and not like. But we often have to pay them more because they're hard to find. Now, because in Puerto Rico, these people have no jobs, we can hire them for the rate that we pay other teachers, which is a decent salary and good benefits. So we went down there and we got 95 teacher openings in general, and we got 200 people applied for jobs in New Haven. 43 met the requirements and now going on to the next stage. And this is at a time when the Board of Ed has had millions of dollars cut from promised state aid. So they're trying to make up a deficit at the same time trying to fill a position. So this seems like an opportunity. How do you feel about that?
No, I think it's really an important thing. And, you know, there were times years ago before there was an economic crisis in Puerto Rico that we would send people there to recruit at University of Puerto Rico. So it's a practice that has occurred. I think because of the economic problems that Puerto Rico is having now, it becomes an issue with more texture than it was previously. Mm-hmm. But it is true that our school population is now over 50% Hispanic. They're not
really?
All. Yes.
Our public school population is over 50% Hispanic.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
No, I'm pretty sure it's
wow.
It's the largest population. It may not be 50%, but it's the largest. What's the
and the Hispanic population in the city is as in turn, and that's an interesting statistic because that's a very accurate decision. We can make that kind of data. Whereas when we look at the census, a lot of times undocumented people are not counted in the census.
Right.
So we've always believed that we have a larger Latino population than the official statistics show. And am I right? The official statistics show us sort of in the 25% Latino population.
I think that we're about a third.
But isn't that what we believe the reality is, as opposed to what the census says?
You know, I think that when the census changed and it now, in New Haven in particular, people feel a little bit more comfortable in indicating that they are culturally Hispanic, that that's when we really got a better sense of who was in our community. But there were times, yes, when people were afraid to.
It's just harder to find people. But I think your statistic you just gave us of the schools would be an indication of how true it is that the real number is higher.
No, it's higher.
And I like living in a city that's a third. I think that's a great mix.
It is. I think so, too. I think it gives us some kind of cultural thickness or oomph, you know? It gives us some stability.
An interesting, more interesting city. Like, for instance, and we'll get back to what you did this weekend, where you had a Latino group that was headlining on the Green on Saturday, African-American jazz musician on Sunday, and everybody had a great time.
Right.
And you love those concerts, but we'll get back to that. Because one member of our one-third city is Bob.
Hey, Bob.
And Bob is calling in on Mayor Monday on WNHH. How you doing, Bob?
All right. It was always good to see the mayor last Wednesday at the Hill House and field and basketball banquet.
Oh, and what was that?
That was they gave out the rings.
The rings.
And we had a really great
speaker. Both
the track
team and basketball team.
Who was the speaker?
Toby Carberry.
Who's that?
He is a young man who, actually his mother's a principal.
Belinda Carberry?
Yeah, Belinda Carberry. And he is now an assistant coach over at Yale for the basketball team. But he played pro ball and was one of the ones from Hill House that actually was able to have a professional basketball career.
Great. So, Bob, you got a question for the mayor?
I have a few questions. My first question is another honor, and I was reading about it, is to Mr. Barbecue Man of New Haven.
Joe Great.
Joe Great, who is having, a street corner named after him?
I believe so.
Saturday. And that's where Dixwell becomes New Hallville, that triangular intersection of Dixwell, Shelton, and Orchard. For many years, Joe Great had his barbecue business there in the parking lot of what used to be a gas station.
Right.
And his bar, and they're going to rename that corner after him. And he's always just someone everybody liked in the community. He did a good job with. And even though I didn't eat meat, I was always glad he was there. You know, people love his barbecue. When they had a Black Jewish festival, they even taught him how to make kosher ribs. That was the most popular. That day, Young Israel, that was the most popular item. So, Bob, did you have a question about that?
Yeah, I did, and the mayor needs to put on her thinking cap for a moment. My question is, what have you not accomplished or would like to accomplish in your third term that you haven't accomplished already?
You know, one of the things that, Bob, that I think we need to...
And I'll listen to your response.
All right.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
You too, Bob. Thanks for calling.
One of the things that I would like to accomplish is to... reduce the amount of domestic violence in our community. We are in the process of working with a group to start a family justice center, but it's going to take fundraising and all of and getting the kind of resources that we need, finding a site to have that. But beyond that, I think there need to be programs in our lockup for people who are arrested for domestic violence. A lot of, because I think that there are people that absolutely need help, and that we need to intervene there and get them the help that they need so that we can diffuse situations. And I don't think any city in America has done a good job with domestic violence. And I think we're small enough and we can be poised to make a huge difference here. So that's what I would like to work on with our new chief and with our CSA, Community Services Administrator, and with our state and federal partners.
It's very interesting something you just said, Mayor Harp, and you spoke last week about how domestic violence is at the root of so much of the crime in our city, but gets so little discussion. It's easier just to freak people out about someone shooting someone in a robbery and take isolated crime incidents that might be just a fraction of what used to occur, but everyone is so terrifying that if you play them up in the news or something, we think we have this problem that we have to quickly chase down that's new, as opposed to looking at the root of it.
Right.
And you just mentioned something about when people are in lockup, and this is something I had not thought about and that I was not familiar with. So one thing you're doing is you're starting a family justice center along with the new police chief, Anthony Campbell, who gets unofficially sworn in tomorrow. And
unofficially, but it's the official one that everybody can come to.
and with retired Captain Julie Johnson, always cared about that issue a lot. But as I understand it, that Family Justice Center has to do with people who are victims. So you get one-stop shopping, a safe place to go, help right where you need it with housing or mental health or safety. Whereas you just mentioned something I never thought about. When someone's arrested for committing domestic violence and they're in the lockup, you also want to get services for them there. Can you tell me a little more about that? Because I had never thought, that seems like a pretty important part of it too.
Well, you know, I don't think we ever think about the perpetrators and what is causing them to do that and what kind of services they may need and how we may be able to sort of like de-escalate whatever it is that's driving them to this behavior. And I think the fact that we now have responsibility for the lockup, that it creates an opportunity and a setting to intervene. And so what we've got to do, I think, is figure out what it is that we do. So I've asked actually ministers and people who are part of the Behavioral Health Services Network to think with me about what kind of intervention would be appropriate and would actually de-escalate.
This is really interesting. Is this being done other places? Do you have some kind of models? So what came up? How'd you come up with this idea?
Well, you know, actually, it came up with a discussion that I had really almost 3 years ago with Shafiq Abdusabar, who was at that particular point in time at the lockup, and made an observation that they get between 20 and 30 people a night who are arrested for domestic violence.
What?
It's huge.
There are 20, 30 people arrested a night for domestic violence in New Haven?
Well, they're in the lockup, 20 or 30 people. Sometimes they're in for a couple of days trying to make bail. And so the only thing that we do is just keep them there until they make bail. But I think it's a great opportunity for us to think about providing some kind of service, getting them hooked up to some kind of anger management. And so I've asked the people on my staff to think about what we might do. And yes, we're going to do the Family Justice Center, and I think that's important too. But this population of angry, largely men, although there are some women, are people that we have got to, as a society, address, or we're still going to have. We're not going to be able to control the violence that occurs in our community if we don't take this on.
Wow, that's really interesting. I'm going to be asking you for follow-ups on that one. As you go along with the one, that sounds very interesting. And you're hearing about that on Mayor Monday on WNHH Radio, your home for community radio at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenempower.org. Mayor Tony Harp is in the house. Mayor Harp, you're going to a retirement event this Wednesday for one of New Haven's heroes, Dorsey
yes.
Kendrick.
Sheroes.
Sheroes, that's right, Sheroes. And Dorsey Kendrick has overseen, I believe for 2 decades, Gateway Community College, turned it into a sort of just regular community college, into the leader in the state by any measure, you know, in terms of how many growth in enrollment when other community colleges had declines in enrollment, in terms of paving the way for having nighttime courses and other kinds of ways for people in the middle of careers to find new careers, especially if the jobs are being cut, let's say manufacturing, and obviously moving into the downtown campus that combined the two and offered a lot more and became part of the city. Dorsey's retiring. I think we all wish her well. And then she's being replaced not by a new president of Gateway Community College, but by the president of Housatonic Community College, is now going to be responsible for 2 campuses, Brian Pounds. There was an article about him yesterday in the Register. I thought good article, said he's a good guy. How do you feel about the fact that we're going to have one person running 2 colleges instead of 2 people running the 2? And I imagine, of course, that this is a budget issue.
Yeah, I think it's a budget issue, but beyond that, I also think that the governor has seen other higher education operations in other states that don't have as many leaders as we do. I think that when I was still in the General Assembly, he thought that the community college system and the CSUs ought to be combined. And so this seems to me to be a step towards that. He at the time, he couldn't get as much political support for combining the CSUs.
Classic case, anytime you want to combine operations government, sometimes it's a good deal, sometimes it's bad, but separate from that, nobody likes to lose their fiefdom.
Well, and you have all these different unions, and even today, I remember when we combined the technical colleges with the community colleges, and you had different unions in each one, and it still exists today, which is really kind of interesting. They were never able to solve that problem. And so I think that's one of the reasons why they haven't moved forward.
And we have a budget crisis, $5.1 billion projected budget of deficit over the next 2 years.
Too.
So if you have one leader instead of 2, you're paying for one.
And, you know, and you can, if there are ways to consolidate other administrative services that are provided to the schools, then You won't impact the schools necessarily in a negative way, but you can reduce costs. Now, that's one side of the coin. On the other hand, you know, you want to have, I mean, what made Gateway what it is today is leadership.
Yeah.
And so, and I'm even more and more convinced that leadership is really important. And so the real question becomes, I've met Dr. Pound too. He seems like a really nice guy. But we need for someone to lead. Let me tell you some of the things that, that Dorsey Kendrick said, aside from getting, demanding that the college be downtown, which was kind of a big deal, and it's still in New Haven, because we could have moved it to North Haven, and we didn't.
And it filled a dead spot for 20 years downtown. Everyone says, why wasn't a store? Because no stores moved in that could stay.
Right.
And now it's bringing a lot of people downtown. It actually brings payments in lieu of taxes, and it makes it more vibrant downtown.
Right. The other thing that, you know, we, if you think about it, we had two hospitals here at the time. There was a nursing shortage.
Oh, that's right. That was another thing Dorsey did new.
Yeah, she. But it wasn't easy. Everybody says, oh, yes, you know, they have an RN nursing program at Gateway. That was a hard fight, but she undertook it and won it. And so I think that's really important. The other thing that the state did was to say that we're not going to pay for remedial education anymore. And so they through Dorsey's leadership, developed a middle college that functions within New Haven Public Schools, gives kids real credit so that if it looks like they need to be remediated, they get that in their senior year.
Again, At Gateway. Because we have that problem. Even kids are doing well in high school in New Haven Public Schools. Often are told they need remedial help in writing. I've seen this with kids I thought were pretty top students. They say we're accepted a place like NYU from Cross, and they said you can't come unless you also take remedial writing.
Right, and what was happening is that so many of our kids were going to Gateway, other community colleges, and spending almost all of their Pell Grants on remedial education. And that's why there was a policy that said that we were no longer going to provide it in that way. And so now we provide it at the high school area, but we do it in conjunction with Gateway. It's very effective.
Well, as with the domestic violence discussion a moment ago, you've just made me think about this in a way I never thought about it before.
Mm-hmm.
This question about the two presidents. So my initial reaction was, until you walked into the studio today, that without a question, it's terrible that, you know, It's great that Dorsey Kendrick gets to retire. Someone can't serve forever. She did 20 years. She had this great impact. She's someone, you know, got to move on. We can't keep her forever. But that we're then, when she leaves, can have only half a president. I thought that was terrible. No excuse for it. Short-sighted budgeting. That there can't be any argument for it. That case, like when we have budget problems, that we're shortchanging our future investments, so the problems just get worse. And it's tied up with, we just don't like change when something's working well, or when we lose someone
right.
who's good, and we forget to look at the opportunities that come, that even when a talented person leaves, that's a chance for someone new to bring new energy and new ideas. But what you just made me think about it differently was in the following way, that not all consolidation is bad, that over time you have to constantly look at government, and sometimes consolidation is used as an excuse to shortchange communities, but other times it makes it run better, and we used to run a system a certain way that might make sense to change in a way that's more cost effective, that maybe it'll be okay to have one person over two, that we're not necessarily true it'll be okay, but that what's most important is leadership. Tell me if I'm paraphrasing this correctly. So when I was listening to you, I'm thinking about what a huge difference leadership makes. So if you had two people running two community colleges, but neither of them is terrific or special, that's not going to be as good for the college or for the system than if you had one Dorsey Kendrick doing both.
Right.
Exactly. It might cost less, and that the quality of leadership is often, just like when we talk about what's a better political system, mm-hmm. it's not always as important as how engaged the citizenry is or how visionary or effective the leadership is. Similarly, maybe we don't have to assume that it's worse that we have one president for both, that there are downsides to that and upsides to that, but what's going to make the difference is the leadership, and that, you know, this guy was coming pretty well recommended, Mr. Pound, maybe we'll give him a chance and say, is that a fair way to say what you just said?
Well, I think it's a fair way. Let's give him a chance. Let's see what kind of
leader he is. But also, it's not necessarily bad that we'd rather not have one for two places, but that there might be good reasons as well as unfortunate reasons, and that overall it might work out just fine.
It's possible for it to work out fine if there's strong leadership.
And you say you don't know this guy well. You met him. He's a nice guy.
He seems very nice. Yeah.
But in case you're just tuning in, you're meeting Mayor Tony Harp on Mayor Monday on WNHH Radio, your home for community radio at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. And Mayor Harp, the other thing happened to Board of Ed last week was something that you and I might not have taken note of because it happens all the time. The Independent has a new reporter covering the Board of Ed. Just came back to town, Christopher Peake. And he called up. He said, what happened tonight? He said, people were just saying the nastiest things to the members of the Board of Ed. They stand up for this public comment time. And this is one guy who just went on for like 20 minutes when you're only allowed to speak 3 minutes and refused to. Yeah, I said, yeah, that's Reverend Kimber. And they said other people came up and told them they're corrupt, they're stupid, they're incompetent, they could care less how the place runs. And, you know, sometimes someone comes in with a new perspective and you say, well, you know, that is notable that we wouldn't note it and write about it because it just happens all the time. So he wrote an article about this is a night at the Board of Ed. And it was useful to me because it raised the question for me, how should we do public comment? Because on the one hand, so it's not, of course, you and I and everyone would agree, it's so important to be able to address your public leaders and give them feedback and you find out important things the public gets to speak. But A, should they speak at a full board meeting or should there be a separate, like other government bodies have separate hearings when there's a defined topic? For instance, the Board of Alders to say, okay, tonight we have a committee hearing on a zoning proposal or tonight we have a hearing on curriculum or mayoral raises. And then people know they can sign up to speak about that. And it doesn't stop the functioning of a full board meeting. And so is a way to fix this to A, say, well, that's just the way it is. That's democracy. It's messy. You know, that's signing up and there are positives. Or to say you need tougher management about what rules of civility are and keeping people to a 3-minute limit. Or should we change it to have committee meetings about certain topics and people get to speak then?
You know, I would prefer having committee meetings about certain topics, to be honest with you.
To have public comment occur then.
Yes, because oftentimes people have a fly in their bonnet or a bee in their bonnet, I guess is the appropriate term.
I'm not sure.
And we,
why a fly versus a bee?
I don't know. But at any rate, it's something that is personally irritating them, and we get to hear all about it. And when, in fact, what they should do is, if they're not getting the kind of response from the administration that they need, come to individual board members and have the individual board members get them what they need. But, you know, if I've heard from some of these people the same negative, destructive comments for the past year, and it's like, I'm sure they still feel like they're not being heard. And, you know, and yet we hear it time and time again. And some of these things are inappropriate or are not fully understood what I would consider to be approaches that the administration is using to solve the problem. And others of it is just that they seem to be really angry. And, you know, this is an opportunity to share it with the rest of the world. And I don't know. I worry about that. And I think that we should come up with a systematic way to better handle it. And I would say that having some form of a workshop or a hearing on issues would be the most appropriate way to do it.
We talked about this last week. There's a whole discussion going on in the world now, whether it's online common threads where we decide the Independent will have fewer comments and just read them all first and have rules of civility, or just in national discussion, the way politics takes place, by the way people are greeted at public meetings if they're elected officials. Now, on the one hand, we don't want to lose that ability for people to speak. And it was so interesting. When you have a mayor's night in, I don't think you get many people coming in. I mean, you every month say, I'm either going to be somewhere in public or I'm going to open my door and anyone can come in and tell me anything. And it's like no one comes. And it was true with John DeStefano, too. And I can't quite figure out why that is.
I've been getting quite a few people.
Oh, you do? Like, what's quite a few?
Well, I've been getting, you know, I don't know, 5 to 10.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay, so it is important to have those opportunities.
Right.
When does it hijack democracy? I would argue at the Board of Ed, it's hijacking democracy, and I also put part of the blame on you guys on the board. I'm not saying you personally, because I don't think you keep the stopwatch. But why, for 2 years, has someone been allowed to go on for 20 minutes at a time when he doesn't get his way on an issue and just berate people? And
What can you do about it? I mean, we could have security remove them. That, I think, creates more of an issue than sitting there and listening.
So you think if you're, it's a 3-minute rule, and somebody gets up and berates people for 20 minutes in a foul way and hijacks a public meeting.
And then they're carted out by security? I don't know. That becomes the story then, right?
It does, yeah. So what do you do? You just let them do it?
You know, that's what we have done in the past, and we try to remind them that they are to sum up their presentation.
His response last week was, you're out of order, and I'm going to talk as long as I want.
And yes. And so I think that one of the... But you have to stick to your guns and continue to say that.
All right. Well, I respect the way that you care a lot about people getting to have their say and not shutting up people if you can avoid it.
You know, I think if we didn't have it at any of our meetings, and that the time to speak, because they're really supposed to, is at our other committee meetings, that would be a way to do it. And we hadn't really considered, we'd had some conversation about that, but haven't really seriously considered it. Some people think it's important for people to be able to talk at those meetings, but I think you're right. When we have an issue that we're considering that is different, we should have a public hearing. And other than that, maybe we shouldn't. That way our business would be completed a lot quicker.
But we do think that people should be able to send in questions to Mayor Harp, which Aaron Good has done. Aaron Good asks, there is a meeting this week on the future of English Station, the mothballed power plant in the Mill River. Well, I love when a question comes in with the explanation. That guy crafts a good question. What does the mayor think the future of English Station is? And remember, that's the little island off Grand Avenue. There was an old United Illuminating power plant that we finally, through the efforts, Mayor Harp asked Attorney General George Jepson to intervene in a much, much bigger deal involving a Spanish-based company, Iberdrola, buying United Illuminating, and succeeded in holding up the sale by an energy giant to an energy giant of UI to insist that the company finally clean up that polluting former station so we could do something with it. So Aaron Good is asking you what we should do with it.
Well, it has to be cleaned up to industrial standards, and in some areas even more. And so I think that depending upon whether or not that huge building, it's a huge, huge building, continues to exist, that there are lots of opportunities for businesses to go in there. And depending upon the degree of cleanup, even perhaps apartments and residential. So it creates a great economic opportunity for the city, depending upon the level of cleanup.
It's interesting when we talk about city planning, which is one of your fields you enjoy. We kind of guess what we'd like it to be when we get a question like this, but sometimes the market has other ideas.
Right.
For instance, the Coliseum site. So this guy, Live, Work, Learn, Play, presented a plan that did a great job of listening to what New Haven wanted. And all these people argue about how we should develop the city. All love this combination of some open public space and lots of apartments and density and mixed use. But the market really, I don't think, is supporting it. That's my guess why all these years later he hasn't been able to start the plan. I wonder how you let a market determine how you should use land, but still trying to guide it in a way that satisfies public needs.
I think one of the ways is that, you know, if we have to be investors in some sort of way, and if we have some sort of financial
skin in the game,
then we can help to guide it. Otherwise, we have some authority through zoning and what we want to see in certain neighborhoods based upon the zoning code, but other than that, you know, we're kind of at the whims of what people want to build there.
Do we get bees in our bonnets or flies in our bonnets in those cases?
Know. Something that's buzzing around in there.
I think, first of all, I just got to get a bonnet.
Yeah.
There's a new community garden across the street from Goss Street Park at the Armory.
Yeah.
And we had the hardest time trying to figure a metaphor for a headline, and we never got it together. We wanted to talk about, like, guns that shoot. That used to be stored at the Armory, and now you're mm-hmm. going to have shoots of plants that are replacing them, but we just couldn't come up with a short enough headline. But there was an event last week. The Land Trust has gotten control of the property around the Armory. While your administration, that's the big building that used to be an Armory, no longer a state Armory, across from Goss Street Park, your administration's been dreaming, scheming about what we could put there. And in the meantime, ArtSpace took over last year for its citywide open studios, had this great exhibit all within mm-hmm. the space. It's a huge space, important neighborhood anchor. This was a first step that we're doing something with it that brings it back to the community. Any thoughts about anything else we're going to do with the Armory? We talked about a culinary school at one point for people to start food businesses or have a joint kitchen.
You know, we've had a number of proposals, and you know, we also have some needs ourselves, as we are going to want to move all of our programs that are over near Union Station out of that area, because it's prime for transit-oriented development. And so we're looking at that building. It's huge.
You could do a lot of things in that building.
You can do a lot of things.
So when you talk, are you talking now about Board of Ed offices at Meadow Street across from the train station? There was talk at times of moving them to the Armory so they'd be in the community, and you open up for transit-oriented development. Remember, we talked about Market a minute ago. You know, maybe housing or offices right by the train station.
Exactly. Also the health department. The other thing that we are doing is using it as a storage facility for a lot of our things that we're required to store.
I've been in there. When people are evicted or then their stuff is stored, the public works brings them to downstairs there. It's kind of fun walking through the place. There are ghosts all over the place, you know. So, but what's up with that chef idea you had, which is that if you had a commercial kitchen where you not only train people, I think with the help of Concat, to start food businesses, they actually share space in a kitchen where you start, like for instance, right now, Mubarak Ibrahim, the serial entrepreneur, you know, she's doing these bean pies, and she got Catalina's Bakery on Whitney Avenue, lets her come in for 2 hours a week on her kitchen. I guess there are people like that. You would then have shared time in a communal kitchen to start their businesses.
No, we still think that's important, and we have some of the old equipment from Gateway. But we're wondering whether or not that's the right space. We're actually taking a look at the kitchen area over in the community, the old community outreach center, which is the new Escape, and looking at whether or not that would, since it's already set up as a kitchen.
That's interesting, because they used to have functions there where they cooked in the basement.
Right, right.
That's so interesting. So that's across the street and also right at Gulf Street Park.
Yeah.
That's next to Bethel Lamy Church, where you guys are building a new drop in center based on the Door in New York, where late teens and young adults who have no place else to go, there'll be 10 beds is actually a homeless shelter for teens, but a bigger place where people can get homework, do recreation, homework help, recreation, or just be somewhere in the evening or afternoon.
Some safe place.
Yeah. And how is that going? We had a report last week where you had stopped work on that for a while till you can get answers from your city engineer about how much it will cost. And you got an answer that it actually is going to cost less than you thought to, $185,000.
Right.
What was it?
That's basically what he thinks. I think pretty soon we'll be going out to bid on that project and get it started again. But we're committed to doing that project. It's
and there's
really
also
important.
A space that the Stixwell New Hovel Senior Center is vacating. What was the thought of? Is that where the kitchens are? Or is that somewhere else?
No. The kitchens are in the back. It's a huge, huge, huge facility. You know, there have been all kinds of ideas floated. So I don't want to float any of them because I don't know what they are, but there are a lot of community organizations looking for space, and we think we could be helpful.
So we're doing some juggling here. All within a few blocks, we have the big Armory, we have the Community Outreach Center becoming the Escape, and we're building a Q House two blocks away from that.
Right.
So one question I've always had in this is that everyone has always looked at these spaces and said, hey, you know, something for kids, right? So they said, let's put the Door in the Armory. Well, now we're doing it at the Escape, so wouldn't it make sense to do across the street from each other? We're looking at building a big Q House, which is going to include an expanded Stetson Library, doing some of the programs the youth center used to have. How do we make sure we're not duplicating that in a way that makes it harder to make all of them sustainable?
Well, you know, one of the things that that really surprised me about youth programming in New Haven is that we have youth programming for kids up to about 13 years of age. And after that, there really isn't much. And so what the Escape is doing is filling that gap. Dixwell Q House is going to be for all ages, but it's probably two. We'll focus on the younger kids.
And then what about the Armory? Oh, then we talked about offices like apartments. So you got it covered.
Well, you know, it's possible.
You're ready for
and then,
question.
You know, honestly, there are mega churches.
Thought I was
going to
surprise you with that one. Yeah.
No, we've been thinking about it. We've just got to come up with a program for it, the building.
All right. Anything else on the agenda this week we should know about?
Not that I can think of. Oh, yes, Chief Campbell is going to be sworn in. You mentioned that. And so I come on down. It's open to the public.
That's Tuesday afternoon at 5:30 at City Hall. It's such a funny conversation with my wife about that, who's also a journalist. you had had a private swearing in for Chief Campbell right after it got approved.
Right.
And I told my wife, hey, we found out they were swearing him in a private. So I ran down and I couldn't believe they're doing that in private, you know, instead of waiting to have this big event weeks later. And we wrote a story about it. And here at the Independent, saying, yeah, we're going to write a story. They should know. And she said, well, what's wrong with them doing it in private? So you're supposed to do everything in public. She goes, really? Remember when you and I got married, we went down to City Hall and we had four people. And then we had a wedding 2 days later with our 35 people in my mom's backyard. And it's so funny because, and I don't think it's necessarily bad as reporters, we always think everything has to be in public all the time. But you guys just decided he was going to be made the chief that day and the assistant chief's there.
He wanted, yeah, some of the assistant chiefs couldn't make it on the day that we're going to do the public. And okay. He wanted them there.
I'm sorry, Harry, did you have another question here? I asked the Aaron good one. Okay. Sorry, that was our station manager, Harry Joe, is making sure every last word gets in on Mayor Monday.
All right.
But that was a funny lesson for me. It was like one of those moments, like, of course it was. Well, she goes, well, why? And I thought, couldn't really answer that one. Anyway, thanks so much for joining us in Dateline New Haven. Hey, thanks, Mayor Hart, for coming by. And I hope you feel better.
Well, thank you very much, and you have a great week.
And thanks to Bertram Moses and Devlin PC, Gateway Community College, for providing financial support. Thanks to people with the questions. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free from the CD A Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass reminding us all that we do know what it feels like to be free. We just have to book our flight. Book your flight and fly free with us all day and all night long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio. Thank you.